I was standing in this famous art gallery looking at this big famous painting. It was huge. It was blue. This is Hearing Voices, the best of public radio. From NPR, with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, I'm Larry Massett. Our show, Paintbrush, The Lives of the Painters. So, the big painting was a Picasso. It was the man with the blue guitar. You know the one. And there was a man and a woman in front of me, looking up at the big Picasso and looking down at their guidebook. Their eyes kept darting up to the painting, down to the guidebook, up, down, and they're thinking. Finally, the man says, "Blue period, definitely blue period." "Yep," says the wife, "blue period," and off they go. Well, what can you say? At least they didn't say, "My kid could have painted that." Kids, what do they know?
He has a fake mustache on and nose. It's rubber. And his hat's sort of a derby.
Oh my God, he has earrings on.
Yes. I think it's just a man dressed up for maybe a costume party or something. Or maybe he's a comedian. I don't know. I mean,
He looks like a villain. And although he could be a detective in disguise, undercover police or something like that.
He looks nice. I mean, his face, yeah.
None of them thinks he looks like an artist. Artists wear smocks and look serious. Picasso wears disguises and looks exuberant. But there was a dark side. Françoise Gillot wrote about it. She lived with Picasso for 11 years and bore two of his children, Claude and Paloma. A reading from Gillot's book, Life with Picasso.
"I told him I often thought he was a devil. His eyes got narrow. And you? You're an angel?" he said scornfully. "But an angel from a hot place. Since I'm the devil, that makes you one of my subjects. I think I will brand you." He took the cigarette he was smoking and touched it to my right cheek and held it there. He must have expected me to pull away. But I was determined not to give him the satisfaction. After what seemed a long time, he took it away. "No," he said, "that's not a very good idea. After all, I may still want to look at you."
It's a girl dressed in white, holding... It's like a space outfit.
Yeah. And he's wearing a weird hat.
It's like a witch's hat.
He's carrying this, and she's carrying this mask.
How do you know if it's a girl or a boy?
We don't.
Look at this one.
It's got a deformed face. Right here,
it's like her eyes on her nose.
One eye's over on the cheekbone. The other one's right above the nose.
It looks like it's a pitiful picture. It looks like a woman's sitting down with her baby in her lap.
Yeah, look.
Like a baby. It looks like a doll.
Yeah, it looks like a little girl playing with a dolly.
What about the hands?
Yeah, one of the hands are like some place you can't really put a real hand.
1, 2, 3, 4. Five fingers. This one has six. This little baby doll has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh, yes.
But listen, you all know. Here's something. You all know that this is a little girl holding a doll. And yet what you're telling us is everything is funny about the little girl and the doll.
Maybe she feels funny. Maybe it's showing what a girl feels like. What she feels like. Maybe she feels weird and she's making faces, or that's what.
Whatever the source of emotion that drove Picasso to create, he wanted to give it a form which had some connection with the real world In my painting, it must be the possibility of recognizing nature, even if it is distorted. That distorted nature, after all, is a kind of struggle between my interior life and the external world as it exists for most people. Picasso often said he didn't try to express nature, but to work like nature.
It's a bull fighter.
What are these? These
look like birds up in the air.
I'm sure that's a bull because I can see the horns. And
another bullfighter. It's another bullfighter. Going like that.
But isn't this amazing? You know it's a bullfight. All it is black blobs on a white page.
Yeah.
Ew.
What is this little girl doing in the sculpture?
She's jumping. She's jumping.
Her hair looks...
It's like the body's made out of a basket, the bottom of a basket.
It's like plaster. It looks like plaster that they chiseled up.
But that looks like a basket in there, the body.
But that looks like more plaster.
And her head looks like they put a mold in it, her hair. It looks like they put real shoes on her.
Yes, it does. I think he did put real shoes, maybe, and then put some plaster or paint over the shoes.
Yeah, but what is this thing? This hook something.
It looks like a pitchfork.
A toy car became the head of an ape. Handlebars from a bicycle emerged as bull's horns. Bressai photographed most of Picasso's sculptures. Bressai and Picasso became friends in the 30s. This reading from Bressai's book, Picasso and Company.
One day the publisher of the book came over to Picasso's studio with me to go through all the statues and decide which one should be in the book. There was one sculpture called L'Oiseau, the bird. Picasso had seen a child's scooter, rusty and deformed and missing its wheels, and to him it suggested a bird. The little running board you put your feet on was the body of the bird, and the steering shaft was the long neck, and the fork which held the front wheel was the head and the beak of the bird. And Picasso had given it a red feather for a tail. Anyhow, when we got to the scooter bird, the publisher came up and whispered in my ear, "Never mind. Don't bother to photograph it. It's more an object than a piece of sculpture." Now, Picasso hears everything, and suddenly he turned to the publisher and pointed to the bird and said very sharply, "I absolutely insist that this sculpture must be in my book."
One day they were all sitting down and having lunch, and they were having fish for lunch. And Picasso finishes his fish and looks on the plate and sees the fish bone. Now, a fish bone is something that anybody else at the table, you just scrape it into the garbage when you finish it, not Picasso. He picks it up and goes into his studio and begins to make it into art. He presses it into a slab of clay so that he's got a relief of that skeleton of the fish. And that fossil, then, that he's just made becomes part of a ceramic dish that he molds. So art for him was everywhere. For us, it would have been garbage, something to throw away. But he was able to stop life at any moment and see its potential. Do you remember how it was, how you felt when you first fell in love? Do you remember that? How the world was absolutely magical. It was filled with infinite possibilities. Flowers were a brighter color than they'd ever been. Music sounded more melodic, more rich, more wonderful than you'd ever heard it before in the streets. Pavement sparkled. And I think that feeling must have been with Picasso all his life. That is somewhere he must have felt most of the time the way we felt that one time.
One day I saw an extraordinary series of little dogs which he'd made for Dora Maar, his longtime mistress. Dora had owned a little white dog which he adored, and one day she lost it. So to console her for the next several days, Picasso resurrected the little dog at every meal using paper napkins. The nose, the eyes, and the mouth were usually just holes in the paper, most of them burned out with the top of a cigarette or a match. The fluffy paper of the napkin was the silky, curling white hair and the long, droopy ears of the little dog looking out at you from beneath its shaggy hair.
It's a dog. It looks like a dog.
It looks like the head of a seal.
It looks like paper.
It looks like a dog made out of paper. It looks crumpled up like a napkin. You can see it's crumpled up.
You can see the pattern on the napkin.
And he did that to try to cheer her up a little bit and make her feel that the dog hadn't really gone. And you knew right away, looking at that, that was a dog.
It could be anything. You could just imagine it to be anything. It could be anything you want it to be. It could be a. It looks sort of like a crab.
You could look at it in a different angle, and you could see something else.
Does that bother you when you can't tell right away, looking at one of the paintings, what it is?
No, I like to take the time to figure it out.
It gets frustrating if you can't get it out.
Makes you a little uncomfortable, huh? What is it? What's like, he trying to say to me? What is this?
It's just like somebody's talking about something and you come in and they won't tell you. What could it be? What could it be?
But also sometimes when you try to...
Anything of great value, Picasso said, any creation, any new idea, has a shadowy side to it. You have to accept it that way. There's no escaping it. And you never see anything very great which is not at the same time horrible in some respect. The genius of Einstein leads to Hiroshima.
It looks like they're in a war or something, and they're being invaded because everybody's screaming and they're yelling, and people are dead. And they look like they're in a cellar.
It's like there's a cellar, and then there's the whole thing.
And they have a candle.
Screaming while it's going down.
War. It could be like they heard a gunshot or...
Oh, it looks like a fire, actually.
Something horrifying.
It looks like a fire. Look at the flames. It looks like a fire.
Guernica.
Things we looked at. Here's a little girl, and she's made of lots of triangles and squares and different kinds of shapes. Then we saw the bullfight that was just blobs of ink. Then you saw him take a paper napkin, and tear it up and make a dog out of it. You saw him do that very realistic little girl or boy. You never were able to decide which, with the witch's hat and the white pants and the top.
Maybe he wants to show that in art you can draw practically anything. You can make so much unrealistic things when in real life it's impossible to be like that or do that.
Yeah. Those look like eyes.
Those are eyes. That's not a drawing, is it?
That's a photograph of Picasso's eyes.
Yeah, they just at you. They hypnotize you.
Stuns you.
But how is he feeling then in that photograph?
I think he feels sort of like he's staring at something. He feels he's into something. He's really...
Yeah,
I think he thought it was he wanted to take a picture of it. He thought it was beautiful.
Maybe he was hypnotized.
Yeah, he thought it was just so beautiful. He just kept from staring.
But these are the eyes that saw all those things that put them on the canvas. They're the eyes that saw the eyes at the same time from the side and from the front. They're the eyes that saw war as screaming bulls.
He saw that.
Maybe
he
was even in
it. He actually saw what was happening.
Maybe he was even in it, Bobby.
His mind. So the rest of us would see what he could see.
The professional artist. Picasso hates the idea. He ridicules it. His voice becomes mocking. His laughter is almost shrill. There is nothing he abhors so much as the artistic attitude towards life. How many times I've heard him say, "I do what I can. I am not a professional artist," as if he were defending himself against a slander. And yet, when he comes across some view of a landscape or some view of the sea, it often happens that he will say, "Ah, if only I were an artist."
This portrait of Picasso was produced by myself, Larry Bassett, and Susan Stamberg. You're listening to Paintbrush, The Lives of the Painters from Hearing Voices.
If I told him, would he like it? Would he like it if I told him? Would he like it? Would Napoleon? Would Napoleon? Would he like it?
What's this?
If Napoleon, if I told him, if I told him, if Napoleon, would he like it if I told him, if I told him, if Napoleon?
Well, it's Gertrude Stein, the writer. Some say a genius. Some say a nutcase. Like Picasso. She actually did know Picasso, and this is what she wrote about him. It's her portrait of Picasso.
Would he like it if Napoleon, if I told him? If I told him, if Napoleon, if I told him? If I told him, would he like it? Would he like it if I told him? Now, not now, and now. Now, exactly as kings. Feeling full for it. Exactitude as kings. So to beseech you as full as for it. Exactly or as kings. Shutters shut and open, so do queens.
She's using her words like paint, like brush strokes. This isn't so much about Picasso as it is a Picasso.
Shutters shut and shutters, and so shutters shut and shutters, and so shutters, and so shutters shut, and so shutters shut, and shutters, and so shutters shut, and so, and also, and also, and so, and also. Exact resemblance to exact resemblance, the exact resemblance, as a resemblance. Exactly as resembling, exactly in resemblance, exactly a resemblance, exactly and resemblance. For this is so because... Now actively repeat it all. Have, hold, and hear, actively repeat it all. I judge. As a resemblance to him. Who comes first? Napoleon the first. Who comes to? Coming to. Who goes there? As they go, they share. Who shares all? All is as all, as yet or as yet. Now to date. Now and date and the date. Who came first? Napoleon at first. Who came first? Napoleon the first. Who came first? Napoleon first. Presently. Exactly do they do. First exactly. Exactly do they do too. First exactly. And first exactly. Exactly do they do. And first exactly and exactly. And do they do. At first exactly and do they do. The first exactly. And do they do the first exactly, at first exactly, first as exactly, at first as exactly, presently, as presently. He, and he, and he, and he, and he, and as, and as he, and as he, and he. He is, and as he is, and he is. He is, and as he, and he, and as he is, and he, and he, and he, and he. Can curls quotable, as presently, as exactitude, as trains, as trains presently, proportions presently, as proportions as presently, father and father, was the king or room, father and whether, was there, what was there, whether and in there, as even say so, one I land, two I land, three the land, two I land, one I land, two I land, as a so, they cannot, a note, they cannot, afloat, they cannot, they dope, they cannot, they as denote, miracles play fairly well, a well, as or as presently. Let me recite what history teaches.
Pick up girls and get called a This never happened to Pablo Picasso. He could walk down your street and girls could not resist the stare, and so Pablo Picasso was never called an a-hole.
You're listening to The Modern Lovers.
Well, the girls would turn the color of the avocado when he would drive down their street in his Eldorado. He could walk down your street and girls could not resist the stare. Pablo Picasso never got called an a-hole, not like you. I never got called an a-hole, not in New York.
Let me recite what history teaches, history teaches. Let me recite what history teaches, history teaches. Let me recite what history teaches. Let me recite what history teaches, history teaches. Let me recite what history teaches, history teaches.
Pablo Picasso, he could walk down the street and girls could not resist the stare. Pablo Picasso was never called an all right, this is it. Well, some people try to pick up girls and they get called an a-hole. This never happened to Pablo Picasso. He could walk down your street and girls could not resist the stare, and so Pablo Picasso was never called.
Hearing Voices. Pablo Picasso was never called Hearing Voices, but we are, and we'll be back in a minute with the story of the painter Frida Kahlo.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
Welcome back to Hearing Voices. This is Paintbrush, The Lives of the Painters. For a painter, the first question is what to paint. Are you going to paint apples, bananas, clowns, horses, sunsets, what? An obvious answer is to paint yourself. Most artists do now and then. But the Mexican artist Frida Kahlo made self-portraits so often, her work amounts to a long and strange autobiography.
The accident took place on a corner, in front of the San Juan Market, exactly in front. The streetcar went slowly, but our bus driver was a very nervous young man. When the trolley car went around the corner, the bus was pushed against the wall.
Frida is standing naked in the middle of this painting, and her body is cracked from the base of her chin down to her stomach. There's a huge crevice down the middle of her body, and inside the crevice is the column of an ancient Grecian building that's shattered. It's barely holding itself together. It's like the backbone of this body that's crumbling.
It is a lie that one is aware of the crash. A lie that one cries. In me, there were no tears. The crash bounced us forward, and the handrail pierced me the way
a sword pierces a bull.
Her entire body is covered with nails, short nails that are just slightly hammered into her skin, on her face, on her neck, on her breasts, on her arms, and even on the sheet that is draped across her stomach.
My father have had for many years a box of oil colors and some paint brushes in an old vase and a palette in a corner of his little photography workshop. Ever since I was a little girl, I had been casting an eye in the direction of the box of colors. I could not explain why. Being so long in bed, I took advantage of the occasion and I asked my father for it. In this way, I began to paint.
I'm Lucienne Block. I met Frida in New York when she and her husband Diego came and for a big exhibit at the Modern Museum. And I lived with her and Diego for 5 months in Detroit. That was in 1932. I was passing by and I stayed there. I was going to stay 1 week with them, but I stayed 5 months. Diego wanted me to stay very much with her because he said she's very lonely. She hasn't anybody really that she likes in Detroit. She's very homesick. And she said, try to get her to paint. Mm-hmm. In fact, when she wasn't working very much, and Diego really wanted her to work, he knew that. He knew her value as an artist. He said to her, paint your own life. He said it. She had made portraits of herself. She had made a portrait with Diego when they were married. But she was yet not settled about that. And he is the one. And I was there when he said that to her. So she began by painting her miscarriage.
Her belly is protruding forward. And her left hand is resting on her belly, but from her hand are extending these red, long veins that are almost like strings to balloons. And there are six of them. One is attached to an object that looks something like a snail. Another is a fetus. But it's a strange-looking fetus. It's kind of alien and ugly looking. Its arms are scrunched up.
I happened to be sleeping when I heard this big discussion. And there was a lot of real, very strong language going on. I mean, I didn't understand it was in Spanish too much. But I knew something was wrong. And all of a sudden, Diego comes out and his hair was all disheveled, you know, and he was in his pajamas. And he said, call the doctor quickly. Frida is having a miscarriage.
Its petals wilted.
And I immediately, I didn't want to believe it, and I went in to see her. And she was in a pool of blood.
The eggshell colored bed sheets is a huge stain of blood that's coming from her body.
La que dio luz a sí misma. Que escribió el más maravilloso poema de su vida.
A naked woman with her legs spread and a head has protruded through her vagina, and her vagina is wrapped around the neck of
the one who gave birth to herself, who wrote the most wonderful poem of her life.
And then she painted her birth. An extraordinary painting. So after that, she painted herself standing. And on one side is America, and on the other side is Mexico. And the art of Mexico is shown. And the art of the United States is a toilet seat, which is quite extraordinary. She was not afraid of anything.
I never knew I was a surrealist till André Breton came to Mexico and told me I was. The only thing I know is that I paint because I need to, and I paint always whatever passes through my head without any consideration. Soy un pobre venadito que habita en la serranía. Como no estoy tan solito. De noche poquito a poco. Y en tus brazos, vida mía.
This is a painting of a forest. And gracefully prancing through this forest is the body of a deer with the head of Frida Kahlo. And the deer is stabbed several times with arrows. So her body, the body of this graceful deer, is filled with holes, and blood is dripping out of the holes. But on her face, there's an expression that seems solid and serene. And she holds her head up very proudly, like a deer would.
My name is Isamu Noguchi. I'm a sculptor. Frida painted herself. That was her one theme, you see. All her desires and frustrations and her limitations, all her limitations became her world, you know. And, it was this pain that she was able to project. This pain, you know, did not translate itself to a complaint, you know, of living, not at all. She never complained. She was, you know, completely alive and did not in any way intrude with her physical, disabilities in her relationships, not at all. She ignored it, you know, or at least you did not know anything about it. She did not, definitely I would say, she did not want to be seen as being a sufferer and a martyr, although she painted that way, you know. This is a private thing. I'm sure her paintings were not made for other people to see. It was entirely a private diary, you might say.
I suffered two grave accidents in my life. One in which a streetcar knocked me down. The other accident is Diego.
I'm Emmylou Packard, and let's see, you want to know what I knew about Frida and Diego Rivera, right? Well, she adored Diego, but she did have a very nice male companion that she went to the wrestling matches with often. And once they took me with them, a very nice Spaniard. So Frida was not... She was never lonely. She adored Diego, but she had other lovers also in San Francisco when the Golden Gate Exposition was going on. She had a lover, and I was appointed to keep Diego carefully somewhere else while she had a date. And of course, he had innumerable women himself, so that it was a mutual kind of thing.
Mi niño. Mi niñito Diego. Dieguito
when Diego was resting, she and I used to sing songs, and I would accompany on the guitar to Diego, who liked that very, very much. And at that time, Diego had just had an affair with her sister Christina, and he used to sing a song that he said was made up because of his affair. He used to taunt Frida very, very badly. And the chorus of it was, you know, quise a ti, quise a tu hermana. Tu eres... Tu solo fuiste petate de mi amor. That was it. He would sing the song El Petate, although he didn't know how to sing. I didn't love you. I loved your sister. You were only the doormat of my love.
Mi niñito Diego. Dieguito. ¿Dónde estás, Diego?
Set in the middle of her forehead, pasted in the middle of her forehead, is the image of Diego Rivera. And he seems to just have become part of her face. His shoulders very delicately mesh into her eyebrows.
Mi Dieguito. Ven. Ven, Diego. Chiquito. Mi niño. Muchacho travieso, ven acá. Some may hope from me a portrait of Diego that is personal, feminine, anecdotal, amusing, full of complaints, with a certain quantity of decent gossip. Perhaps they hope to hear my laments of how much one suffers living with a man like Diego. But I cannot believe that the banks of a river are damaged by allowing it to run. Nor the earth is damaged by the rain, nor the atom diminished by discharging its energy. For me, all has a natural compensation. In my role, difficult and dark, as an ally of an extraordinary being, I have the reward at a green point has within a great amount of red, the reward of balance.
Well, I'm Fanny Ravel. I was a pupil of Frida Kahlo from 1942 until we finished school 3 years later. This period, these years in Mexico, you couldn't get to be a really great artist if you were not involved with the social, political movement in the country, like Orozco, like Siqueiros, like Diego, like all the group of the muralists who were painting the subjects of what was happening in the country. I talked many times with Frida about that because she was trying to do a political art and she never could because she was living her dreams and her inside dreams. She was another kind of artist, and this is one of the reasons that Frida was not that important as she was years later.
Soy Arturo García Bustos, pintor y grabador muralista mexicano.
I am Arturo García Bustos. I am a painter and muralist. When I was younger, I studied with Frida Kahlo. Frida painted, but it was everything. Her whole person was a work of art. She always dressed up with flowers in her hair, many rings on her fingers. She was happy, with the happiness that doing something creative can give you.
Bueno, nos enseñó el amor a México.
She taught us to love Mexico, to love the popular art of the people and pre-Hispanic art, our roots. Sometimes on Fridays, we would go to the Toluca market. At the market, we would eat tacos. And she said, tacos indígenas. And we would stop and look at colonial art that always fascinated Frida. And you can see that it's an important source of her work. The popular art, the so-called ex votos that the faithful put in churches. In one of those trips, we saw a picture of St. Francis lying down, surrounded by plants. Later, I saw something very similar in a painting of Frida's, where she's lying down in the landscape of the Pedregal, and the roots are wrapped around her body.
Cada día estoy peor. Each day I'm worse.
This is an amazing image of Frida lying in her bed, set in a sandy, dry desert filled with cracks and crevices, and a big, burning red sun in the sky.
Cada día estoy peor. Each day I'm worse. In the beginning, it was hard for me to get accustomed to it, since it is a hell of a thing to put up with this type of apparatus. But you cannot imagine how badly I felt before putting it on. I could no longer really work because no matter how insignificant they were, all movements exhausted me. I got a little better with the corset, but now I feel just as sick again. And I'm now very desperate because I cannot find anything to improve the condition of my spine.
She's gazing out at you, and tears are dripping down her face. But from her mouth is pouring this torrent of things. The thing that's pouring out of her mouth is in the shape of a cone. And the cone is like this cornucopia of strange things that are dripping out of it. There's a skeleton and a fish and sausages and a dead chicken and cauliflower and a pig and a side of beef that's dripping out of the side of the cornucopia and hanging down towards her bed.
Soy Lola Álvarez Bravo, photographer.
I am Lola Álvarez Bravo, a photographer.
Fue una temporadita en que Frida se sentía bastante mal.
Frida was very sick at the time, and I was talking with Diego, and I mentioned that Frida seemed very bad off. Diego said yes, the doctors say she is quite ill. So I suggested to Diego, wouldn't it be a good thing, a positive thing for Frida, to help perk her up, to give her an exhibition in my gallery? Diego was very happy, and he said he would help me in any way.
These things that are coming out of her mouth are red and orange and deep yellow. And they just give the painting this feeling of heat and burning, burning like burning in hell or burning in a desert.
El día de que se iba a inaugurar la exposición, ya la víspera.
On the eve of the opening of the exhibition, Diego called me and said, Frida is still very sick, but she says no matter what happens, she is coming. The next day, the opening, everything seemed to be running smoothly, but 6 o'clock came. I hadn't heard anything from Frida. 7 o'clock came, and 7:30 was the opening. All the people in the street were crowding the door because they wanted to get in. So after 7:30, I called Frida's house to see what was happening, and they said she was on her way. all of a sudden, I heard patrol cars and motorcycles, just a terrible noise. It was Frida. She had come in an ambulance. They took her out on a stretcher, and they put her in her bed, which they had brought to the gallery. We formed a line that went in one door and out another, filing past her bed. All her friends were there. Poets came to her bedside and recited verses to her. Some sang the songs she loved. And for a moment, she forgot she was sick.
Está anocheciendo en mi vida.
Watermelons, whole watermelons, and watermelons that are cut in slices, and watermelons that are cut right across the diameter so the heart is showing.
Oh, está anocheciendo en mi vida. Night is falling in my life.
Watermelons that are cut in sawtooth, jagged edges, and they're painted in different shades of bright greens. They're all placed on a table, but they barely fit in the frame of the painting. And right at the base of the painting is one sliced watermelon, and carved into the pink-red meat of the watermelon are words: Viva la vida, Frida Kahlo, Coyoacán, 1954, Mexico. And that means long live life, Frida Kahlo. And it was painted in 1954 in Coyoacán, Mexico. And this is the last painting that Frida ever painted.
I hope the exit is joyful. And I hope never to come back.
Frida Kahlo, Viva la Vida, was produced by Katie Davis, funded by the National Endowment for the Arts. Ophelia Medina read from the diary. Cecilia Weissman described the paintings. Original music composed and performed by Jay Richardson. Frida Kahlo died in 1953 at the age of 47. Vermeer, the great Dutch painter, died in 1675 at the age of 43. They never met.
Back in the days of Rembrandt, back in the time of old Jansteen, all of them giants of shadow and light, but no one was like Vermeer. Some paintings smell of joy and sweat, some paintings plain look so fine, some paintings are sad and passionate, but Vermeer sends a chill up your spine. Yeah, Vermeer sends a chill up your spine. Vermeer was eerie, Vermeer was strange. He had a more modern color range, as if born in another age, like maybe 100 or so years ago. What's this, a ghost in the gallery? Great Scott, the Martians are here. These strange little paintings next to the others. No one was like Vermeer. Vermeer was eerie, Vermeer was weird. He had his own way of doing things with the paintings from another era, another era.
Vermeer from Jonathan Richman. You've been listening to Hearing Voices. Special thanks to Maureen Clemens at the NPR Library. I'm Larry Massett. Our website is hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.